What we're going to do now is that we're going to start in a series of five short presentations. The first two are going to be by students that are very involved in projects in education sustainability here, and then we will hear from Marcy Slavkoff from Teaching and Learning Services, Dean Grant, the Dean of the Faculty of Science, and Deputy Provost Morton Mendelson. And they've all each been asked to talk about the specific aspects or their views on the general topic of education and sustainability from the perspective that they're in. And so the first speaker that we're going to, so some rules of this, when we asked these people to speak, that was to be short presentations. So the rules are the students have 15 minutes each in total, not each have 15 minutes. When you get within the last 3 minutes of your time, I will stand up at the side here. Before I became a university professor, I played rugby, so which is actually I found out being very good training for being a university professor. But so our first speaker is Jonathan Glencross, and he's a U3 student from the School of Environment, and he's going to talk on the McGill food system. Jonathan.
Hi everyone. I guess the topic of my discussion today was, what's my view for education and sustainability here at McGill? I don't take direction very well, so instead of talking about that to begin with, I'm going to start with a story. So what happened was last week, or about a week and a half ago, I was sitting in the provost's office with a number of individuals negotiating a sustainable projects fund for the campus. The basic premise was to have students and the administration collaborate together, create a sustainable projects fund, and the purpose of the fund would be to create more opportunities to engage the entire community, and actively so, in sustainability initiatives on campus and in the research. And so naturally, we got into discussing, well, where the matching funds would come from, and after chasing our tails for a while, I said, well, hey, hold on. You guys are about to have Bill Clinton come and speak in 2 days, right? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, okay, just give me 2 minutes with him, and I'll secure the matching. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And so obviously the provost got started laughing and stuff, and I was like, well, I'm thinking to myself in my head, no, I'm serious. Al Gore helped Concordia get their sustainability fund. Why not, right? But nonetheless, I figured if in the same conversation with the provost, I help ask him, can you help me raise $2.5 million? He also has a full-out burst of joy. I'm not gonna push it. This happened. This is a direct quote from President Clinton's speech. If the mission of this university, talking about McGill, is to promote sustainability and widely shared prosperity, we have to find more ways to do this so that every person feels as though he or she is an active participant in embracing the challenges of our time. It's incredibly empowering, and we have to find a way of actualizing that. Now, Nigel has told me since the first class I took with him in the School of Environment 3 years ago was, in the first, when you start your talk, establish credibility. That's what you need to do. So I'm not trying to say that Bill Clinton's actually my backup on this, but it's encouraging to know that he sees the university's role in a similar way as what we were trying to do. It was actually on the exact same page of the student newspaper, which was kind of ironic. But the provost did actually commit to it, and we're going to referendum in November to have the students match. But the more important thing is this was an exercise in just telling you what's going on. I think the content of what he said is very relevant to what we're doing here. If you read over what he said, it's if this really is our mission, which is what we're about to start embarking on, we have to find more ways. And that's an indication that there is both an opportunity or a lack of opportunity. The second part is that talking about perception and mindset, so people actually need to feel actively engaged in these changes, because right now the way we present them, I would say, it kind of paralyzes movement because they're so large, and we really need to give people the opportunity to feel like they're empowered by their activity in them, not paralyzed. And the last part is we have to find ways of actualizing. So there's overlapping needs in society that Mr. Clinton was talking about, and there's needs on the campus that I think are actually exactly parallel to those, and what I'm going to be talking about is different ways of matching those two needs. So the question is, are we doing it this McGill, or you could even ask, why not? Is this even the role of the university? I'm going to bring this back to, this is from Michael McGonigal. He wrote Planet U And this is a really interesting quote, just to give us some perspective in answering, is this the role of the university? So about 85 institutions in the Western world were established by 1520 still exist in recognizable forms, similar functions, unbroken histories. He goes on to list them: Catholic Church, Parliaments of the Isle of Man, and 70 universities. So of the 85, 70 of those still existing are universities. So he goes on to point out, kings have ruled, feudal lords with vassals, guilds and monopolies have come and gone, but these of these 70 universities, they are still in the same locations with some of the same buildings, professors and students doing much of the same things, and this is my favorite part, and with governance carried on in much of the same way. Now, this is so loaded, and I could just go on forever, but I'm going to give you two perspectives for what this means for me as a student who's engaged right now. There's two perspectives. One, my reaction was, give up now. This institution is so entrenched that we have no hope. I should just go try to solve climate change on my own rather than make this a progressive institution. The other one, which I thought was actually more constructive and something I want you to all think about for the entirety of the day, because this is about the how-to conference, right? Institutions, universities, they're really good at sustaining themselves. Despite all of the things that are happening outside of them, this is an indication that there's some resilience, and I'd like to ask, you know, where does this resilience come from? So if universities are really good at sustaining themselves, despite the overlap with social needs I indicated to begin with, and, you know, a lot has changed since the 1520s, you know, that they are set up to be insular could be perceived as both a strength and a resilience. A strength and a weakness. And so then the question was, where does the resilience come from? I've thought a lot about it, and one thing that couldn't get out of my head was Ken Robinson's talk at TED about creativity and education, and what he said, it could be an answer about the insular nature or self-perpetuating nature of institutions of higher learning, is that all the incentives in education today are set up to create more university professors. And so what I've thought is reflect on my own experience, and if this is true, then my experience should lead to the steps of professorhood, and mainly I think it's easy to argue that publication is especially for research-intensive university, is right up there. So does my experience reflect that? So of my 24 courses at McGill, I'm going to go through these really fast, but this is going to give you an indication whether or not, you know, Robinson's quote means anything. 24 of 24 classes required essays, essay responses. 23 of, or 24 had citation and peer review reference requirements. All right, they're leading me in that direction. It's a good thing. Now, this is the interesting part, interaction. 2 of 24 provided an opportunity to focus my research in the province. 1 in 24 required me using primary literature, which is one step removed from the real world, from the real social issues. And 0 in 24 actually required me to talk to anyone. I've had one course which touched on real-world data collection skills, so identifying stakeholders, interview methods, real right questions to ask. And of the 67 essays I've written, 11 were returned with more than a grade, and 67 are collecting dust and only contribute to my personal development. So what I'm trying to say here is that there's a data collection opportunity and a communication opportunity here that we're not really taking advantage of, and I think that it limits our ability to communicate effectively in the world, and it also gives you the impression that might give you the impression that your work matters. So, as a result of the current system, it is not only easier to hide in the textbook or the database, but than to do something practical, original. It is actually encouraged, rewarded, and required, sometimes required. So what I wanted to say is that in light of all this, I'm still here. We're talking about sustainability, so opportunities exist. And I think one interesting way to bring universities back into the world is through applied student research. And it's for place-based research in particular is what I'm interested in. The McGill Food Systems Project, I was really fortunate to work on this project with 5 really passionate students this summer. And I guess our focus on food is that regardless of ecological awareness, social group, and political orientation, everybody needs to eat. We can talk about, you know, electric vehicles, but I think the notion of a car is debatable if you talk about sustainability. So that's why we're into food. Now, unlike any other presentation I've given, I'm going to start with failures, so things that didn't work with us, so that you can see how we tried to learn from our mistakes, because we were eager, we had a lot of issues. So I wasn't involved in the project at this point, but we coordinated 2 projects last fall, and both failed to meet their goals. They were basically asked, as a result of the courses they were in, to write Omnivore's Dilemma in a semester. They were supposed to analyze a number of meals, come up with the impact and then make recommendations. And the biggest problem was that they took global issues with regard to food and they tried to stamp them onto McGill without actually being without interviewing chefs, without interviewing the people involved at Food at McGill, and they just made recommendations to the administration at Food, and it was a complete failure in terms of achieving the goal. We learned a lot from it, but nonetheless, it wasn't. There was a real lack of common vision. So what we said is, okay, well, we still believe in the applied student research model. We need to reframe our roles and our focus. So we took it upon ourselves, because there is no existing channel for this, to create a series of goals, a strategy, proposal, and funding, all external from the university, and then create a system that we think can change things. So we got internal buy-in from all the stakeholders. We focused the research on the five residences, because there's 3,000 students eating 3 meals a day, 8 months out of the year. And what we wanted to do is create a baseline to build from. So the students didn't understand the system they were working in, and the individuals involved weren't communicating it properly. So we need to understand, where does our food come from and why, who's in charge of our food sourcing decisions, and how we can improve. And that way, when we go to this semester, we knew all this baseline for students to work from. We went to all the different stakeholders between the farm and the plate. There's actually 7 stages, and we asked, what's your relationship in this chain? How do you relate to other actors in this chain? And where are the opportunities and barriers? What constraints are you working with? We put that all into this for institutional memory, put into a farm-to-plate guide, annual purchasing database, and organizational charts, so that students can actually have the material they need. We created the conditions and eliminated as much uncertainty as we could by focusing it on local, so that students this semester could focus their research. We tried to be a bit more creative in the way that we communicated things. So this is an event that we held with 400 students came to learn about what we did this summer. And then we have a couple interactive tools. So this is actually my only section of engagement or interaction, which is unfortunate. But I want to ask you all, on average, how far do you think a Granny Smith apple travels to reach McGill dining halls? So hands up for 700 kilometers. 1,700? 5,700? And 7,700. All right, good. You guys have a good tune for this. Now, you can all actually do this calculation. You can go onto our Google Maps application that we had thing, and you can click on Apple Granny Smith. And what it does is it shows you where the food is coming from over the course of... It's not working, but what happens is this is actually France once the Google Maps comes in, and it's on the right-hand side you see the months of the year that we're getting it from France. The same thing for Chile. There is actually a map, but Google's just taking its time. But nonetheless, it's an interactive way, and you can do that for a bunch of different things. I'll quickly go back to the show. You show. Okay. So 5,700 kilometers, we weren't happy with it, so we established local food days in all the residences. Now we have 15 student researchers coming up with standards for different industries in food. This is Yale's. We're working towards it. There's 3 different classes working. They're all third and fourth year students. Their standards will be implemented in the winter, and if they work, they're going to be written into all future contracts with the subcontracted food service providers on campus, so everyone is abiding by the same things. The one thing I've always been confronted with is this a zero-sum game? And I don't think so. I think we can maintain intellectual rigor while calling for pragmatic work with new and creative ways of communicating. And I think we just need to create the conditions for this to be not only accessible but encouraged, and the rewards will generate themselves. So Bring It Back is looking forward from the past. I'm looking at what Clinton said and about finding more ways that are active and finding a way to actualize those ways. I think that, yes, the university's role and higher learning and sustainability are inextricably linked. I think McGill can and McGill should. And this is what I would say to the students in the audience. I was at the ASHE conference in 2008 where Van Jones, Tony Cortese, the coordinator of ASHE, and Peter Seng were there sitting at a table, and I went up to them after their talks. I said, look, you know, I'm a new student. I've only been involved at McGill for a year now, but, you know, it's taking forever. You know, we're just not getting to where we needed to go. So what should I do? I need your help. You guys have created institutions around your ideas, what to do. And they said, don't wait. push, and become the force you wish existed. It's always easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And, I mean, they named ASHI and out of the hat. They just said, look, we've got an idea. What can we do with it? And it's the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. They started putting that label on their ideas, and things just happened. They didn't ask permission for anything. And now they've got a huge organization trying to do similar things here. So I guess the one thing that, you know, the changes that have been made over the campus, and we have made changes, is it's good to realize that, you know, we can do things without having to respect all of the hierarchy, because things can happen. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was one very good example of a group of students that have actually taken the idea of research forward and have actually done something that is mobilizing far bigger on the campus. The one other message that Jonathan, I think, took away in abundance from my course was I told the students always to question authority. So it's actually interesting to hear him reference an authority to support his argument to go through, but clearly he is questioning authority on the campus.